You're very welcome to the Firm and Fast Golf Podcast. I'm your host, Shane Derby. Today's episode is the final part of our interview series with the grandee of Irish golf course architecture, none other than Pat Ruddy, the man responsible for the design of Irish golf courses, such as the European Club, Sandy Hills at Rossapenna Golf Resort, the Glasheely and Pollard courses at Ballyliffin, in addition to a plethora of other revisions and new courses. In this episode, we take a look at Ruddy's influence on golf in County Donegal through design commissions at Ballyliffin, Rossapenna, Murrava, North West, and indeed Port Salon. We also take a look at his revitalisation project, County Sligo Golf Club at Ross's Point, where much of his early golfing inspiration undoubtedly stems. An afternoon in Pat's company is time well spent. Apologies for some scratchy audio in some parts. Hopefully it doesn't detract too much from the final product. Thanks again to Pat for his time and to you for tuning in. We do hope you enjoy this final installment of the chat with Pat Ruddy. Onwards to Donegal, if you'll allow me. Obviously, it's a county in the corner of northwest Ireland. It seems indelibly linked with the name Pat Ruddy. Donegal, Ballyliffin, Rossapenna, Port Salon, and Northwest are all golf clubs where your fingerprints are in evidence. Just interested initially to understand how your first visits to Rossapenna and Port Salon back in the 60s materialised.
Well, I was a journalist, you see, and a golf nut. And I'd go up to Rossapenna then, and because the Donegal Alliance would be on. I'd go up to play in that. And later on, my bride-to-be would come with me, and we'd go for a stroll out in what's now Sand Hills Golf Course. Beautiful place for a courting couple to go for a walk. So I savoured it muchly. And then into Donegal, and I made friends with the McGees and with a number of people. Yeah, and up on the little golf course, nine holes up on the hill in at the town at the time, you had to walk with a great advantage if you had a short leg, as long as it was the one on the uphill side. And then they went to move out to Murrava, the new place out of the seaside. And I was there as a witness of all that and as a friend. And I wrote about them, and Eddie did the job at Murrava, and he did a wonderful job. And but the amount of money they had and so on, and then the scale of the game has changed. I mean, see, who would think that the game would change, that people would start to cheat to such an extent that they go to the gymnasium instead of the pub? You know, there's all bloody athletes playing now, hitting the ball 280 and 300 yards.
But it's funny you mentioned that. I don't know if you've been, you possibly aren't the biggest user of social media, but there's been some videos online over the last, I'd say, 6 months or so, more particularly at John Morgan, actually, who's a commentator on Sky, a former tour pro, he actually was just looking at one yesterday, which must have been from Bahrain, Richie Ramsey. And John brings a couple of, you know, persimmon woods and that sort of stuff along with him to tour stops. And on a Tuesday or a Wednesday when they're out practicing, he'll whip out the Wood Brothers this or a McGregor or whatever it is. And funnily enough, you know, yes, they're better athletes, undoubtedly. But, you know, Nicklaus was an athlete, and Palmer was an athlete, and Sebi was an athlete in their own way. But amazingly, you know, when this athlete takes out the persimmon, you know, with button strikes, you know, straight off the middle, you know, they're losing 60 yards, 50 yards. So what's your take on, I mean, they are better conditioned, I understand that. But has the balance of the technology swung in favour of the player away from the golf course?
Well, I don't say the player away from the golf course or vice versa, but the game has it's so much easier to get around the golf course in terms of distance. And if they made the same differences in football, say Croke Park would be inside O'Connell Street now, you know. They didn't do that.
I guess what I'm getting at is...
Fitzwilliam Tennis would be down in Donnybrook and so on. And golf has just burst through its boundaries in a big way.
But if you look at, I mean, you look at other sports like baseball. So obviously the pros can only use wooden bats.
Yeah.
The amateurs can use metal bats. Yeah. You look at, you know, the swimming suits that used to be in evidence, they were banned because essentially the world records went out, but you know, were bizarre. And tennis, they slow the ball down. I guess what I'm getting at is, would you be in favor of the efforts of the RNA and the USGA in terms of doing what they're trying to do? And like Harrington put it well, he goes, look, what they have proposed in relation to the golf ball is a bit soft. You know, 15 yards is really just treading water. I suppose what I'm getting at is, and you've very pertinently made the point of you don't see Fitzwilliam Tennis Club down at O'Connell Street, and you don't see, you know, the pitches become bigger and whatever else. So has the technology outgrown the game as if we look at the development curve?
I don't know the answer to this, but there's no question they've transformed the game in not a good way. That we enjoyed playing golf at the size it was at, and it was always a game of skill. Ultimately, no matter which size, I mean, you go out to pitch and putt, and very few people can get around in 18 holes of pitch and putt in 54 shots, the longest shot being 100 yards or something. So it's ultimately a game of skill, but certainly they're chopping up real estate now and making it very difficult. You know, they take Course A, where you have two parallel par fours going opposite directions. The shots are now overlapping, going opposite directions. Two 220-yard shots, you needed 440 to keep the two tees apart. Now, fellas are hitting it up in front of the tee on the other hole, and quite often out off their own hole, wandering around and creating a problem, which I think is enormous. I up until recently, when I got a little bit sick with the hips and that, I go to court 6 or 7 times a year in this country as an expert opinion on golf course accidents.
Boundary issues and that sort of stuff.
And it's always, every year there'll be 1 or 2 eyes lost around the country. And I don't know what's happening now, I'm out of touch. But you never heard of it because, except for the one in Granore, it was always settled. Out of court, you know, and you're not safe from your man now 300 yards away. You're not safe from him if he's of the ape variety.
Absolutely. Getting back to Donegal for a second, Pat. Obviously, you what can you tell me about Ballyliffin? Obviously, the old course, so the club was initially founded in the 1940s. It's up in the Inishowen Peninsula. And in fact, I believe golf has or had been played in and around the Pollen Green by members of the British Army stationed at Leenane Fort, and later in the 20s and 30s by the Carndonagh Bankers. The current property, which is about 400 acres, was purchased by the club in the 70s. Messrs. Hackett, Laurie and Pennick all appeared to make suggestions relating to the first 9 holes. And by 73, what is now known as the old course had been extended to 18 holes. I think by the early 1990s, the club wished to improve their bunkering. And you were approached to review how this might initially be accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
What happened then?
Well, I'd been in touch with the club through a fellow called Joe Masterson from Sligo, who went up there working, and he was a great promoter of the theatre and things. And he used to write to me every week in the Evening Herald, Ballyliffin is great, Ballyliffin is this, I'm talking about now in the 60s, Ballyliffin is great, Ballyliffin is great. So I'd write about them. And then I never went up there. So far away, you see, yeah. And with the north intruding on the line of attack,
yeah.
Donegal became a lost county to a degree for years. So, but eventually came the call, would I go up and look at the bunkering, you see, and that, on the one course they had. And I said, well, I will, on condition that we meet in Monaghan first and we talk about it, make sure we understand
halfway. Each other,
and bring a wee check with you. Yeah. Which they did, very good fellas. Okay. And that committee, normal setup, they have two or three fellas saying you're lovely, and there's a fella set to project with a five iron, you know, to get the conversation rounded.
Yeah.
So I agreed to go up, and we went up. Tom Craddock and I was a partner with Tom at the time, who was one of the great heroes of my life, and came on this place absolutely astounding. And more or less, forget about the bunkers for the moment. What are you doing with all that lovely land up further up?
Up on the Doon Ridge.
Said, what do you mean? I said, you should build another links.
Yeah.
And they said, well, what do we do for money? And I said, well, we'd figure that, because people will come to play it if we make it good enough. And also, we'll get you a grant. And they said, we won't get a grant. And I said, well, I've just got a grant myself, so I know some of the mechanics of it.
Know what levers to pull.
And the people who are administering it are keen on getting the golf in this country promoted. And if I tell them it's exciting, they'll at least look at it, you see. So they got a grant. And I said, park the old course there for the moment. So we set about building the best links we could on truly spectacular ground. And then went back and we changed some holes on the, I had the maps in holes in my head, changed six holes on the, and introduced two or three new holes on the old course, because to get out, the old course encircled the clubhouse. So you had to damage it or break the wheel to get out to the further out ground and back. And one or two holes couldn't be retained. And they were perfectly lovely holes. But I think the ones we put in their place are better. I'm a bit modest in that respect. But so we finished up doing something like a new 18 and four or five other holes plus changes. And the club were absolutely astounding in a tiny, tiny little town. They came every step of the way. And then I attacked them towards the end because I was looking for a few pounds to do another five or six bunkers, and they didn't have the money. But they're building this palace of a clubhouse. And I said, you're building a bloody clubhouse and we can't finish the golf course. And these are lovely men, a bit of fun. But they did the golf course too, and they have a lovely clubhouse and they have a lovely golf club.
And of course, host of the Irish Open, Russell Knox won in 2018. You did a bit of nipping and tucking before that.
Yes, yeah, taking the amateur. No, it was
amateur championship, actually, this year.
Amateur championship.
Well.
There's a fella becoming president. I can't name names too much, but one fella in particular, Patsy Doherty, is the president this year. And God, he sacrificed at least 25 or 30 years of his life. They're out virtually every morning with the greenkeepers. And it takes that in the club. You need dedication of one or two individuals.
And knowledge, I suppose.
And willing to, knowledge and
perseverance.
And willingness to learn. Mm-hmm. You see, at one stage I said to them, they're lovely, lovely men. I said, gentlemen, look, this place is going to be great, but we must keep touch with what's going on. And I said, you should take a junket down the country, go to the Hinch, go to Ballybunion.
Go for a tour.
Come over to the European, see what's going on. Yeah. What are you competing against?
Yeah.
So I exaggerate totally. Six of them got in the back of a high-ace van, did the tour, and they're back for supper.
Uh-huh.
Didn't want to spend money on their members.
Yeah.
You know, no, they stayed a few days, but I exaggerate things. Yeah. Storytelling.
But the Donegal people do drive quickly, though, as well.
Yeah. So when we got it all done, then I said to them, now, lads, look, you have a world-class golf course, which they have, well, two. And I said, and they kept working at it for years and years and years. and have me up. I was up and up and up. I don't know if same at Donegal and a lot of my jobs. I kept going annually for 20 years or whatever. And then I said to them, now, lads, we have golf in Donegal, which compares fairly closely to that in Kerry. But you have to learn one thing from the Kerry fellas, and that's how to bullshit. You have to be able to tell the story of how good you are. Because they were modest, didn't realise they were... Well, they did realise, but modest. And it's a great place.
Yeah. And so good a job you did, Pat, that they had you back to do the Pollen Par 3 golf course.
I enjoyed doing that too. I was a bit sick at the time, but they've just been so loyal and so loving. It's awesome. And the sad thing is there have been some people departed this fair way of life. And you have a bigger club in the clouds than you have on the planet now. It's amazing. But you've seen it.
Yeah.
It's a fine golf
course. Stunning.
Fine stunning golf course. Beautiful scenery, beautiful holes. Some shots which are demanding if you're 12 handicap trying to play a 2 handicap shot. But if you have sense, it's not demanding.
Yeah. As you said earlier on, play the shot you know you can hit as opposed to the shot you think you should be able to hit.
Oh, yeah, Jesus, yeah. It's far better to be on in 3 at a hole than down in a lake or out in the woods in 5. Yeah?
And they must be really excited about the Amateur Championship coming up in 24.
Ah, yeah, that's astounding, really. It's astounding that, you see, the North had it isolated for a long time. And one thought that all of that connection would be just Portrush, Royal County Down, and Portmarnock. But the RNAF people are very nice always have been. And they've reached out and they did the same with the island. And that's great. I wrote to them one time and I was pestered. My job is to fly balloons sometimes for a kite. And I was doing the European Club and I wrote to, I think it was Astor McKenzie. I said, you call the championship the Open and the champion is the champion golfer of the year. No word of British. So when are you coming over our way? And he wrote back and said, yeah, we'll have a look, you see, which they did eventually and that. So I didn't. But I go to the Open Championship and I flocked by, the word got out that this letter was out and my friends in the American press in particular all excited, when is the Open coming to British Bay? And it was never coming. But I enjoyed the crack, how they misread it. I'd whiff the wind for all of Ireland. I think our island and the rest of the world is good too. Let no one harm anyone. But the boys got all excited, thought that they were a journalistic colleague of a guy who's going to have the British Open on his property. Never going to happen.
But well, we might. I mean, whatever. I mean, it would appear that perhaps the Portmarnock's in consideration for that. So.
Ah, yeah, I'd say they get it and worthy of it and wish it goes well for them. And they're welcome to the job. It's awesome hosting an event that size, all the logistics.
Yeah, well, they have the property to host it in terms of from a space perspective.
It's a great place. And I did a sketch there 1 year of a perfect course for the Ryder Cup. Would taking the need for parking and everything and taking the proximity of Royal Dublin, St. Anne's, Sutton and Portmarnock, have a course embracing all four of those.
And logistically, I'm not quite sure how that might work, but it would be certainly interesting.
A very short hop across from the end of St. Anne's to Sutton.
Yeah.
An even shorter hop over. No, have an old ferry or something.
A boat, okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And it could be done, you know.
It could be done, and, where there's a windows away.
And I did this, the ideal links, you know.
Yeah.
Bit of fun. I love doodly-doo.
Somewhere else where I have a significant soft spot is Rosspenna. Yeah. So I know you did a bit of work up there for the Caseys.
Just a little bit.
What can you tell us about that?
Just a little bit. I Frank Casey, the older, came to see me. And he's one hell of a good guy and his wife, Hillary. And back, I don't know what year, in the 80s. And I went up to see it, and he was, Eddie Hackett had been there for a while, but Eddie was getting old. He was my age now then, and he was weakening and had gone. And the lads are doing what has happened for centuries in Ireland. They were doing the thing themselves a bit, you see. And so I got at it and I said, we got to do a proper job, such good ground, would you ever...
Will they stick a log in the fire there?
Yeah. Job. If you get a...
Hope it hasn't gone.
Gone out. Just put two on it and see what... Okay. See what comes.
And do it that way. Yeah,
throw them in. Well, just throw them in. And pray.
Pray.
Yeah, it's gone too far. It's so occupied with my own greatness.
Huh?
That's it. That'd do nothing. It's important if you want a flame, touch a flame. Hmm?
Huh?
If you want a flame, you touch a flame.
Exactly.
I'm always teaching them that here. But went out and there were two or three of Eddie's holes we saved bits of, and others extended them or whatever, put them to the left or the right. And I went after the best links I could in the dunes. And it came up good in my view. But it turned out very good because there's a spectacular dune system.
Some of the vistas you've actually...
I mean,
the dunes, and particularly... you've made unbelievable use of the views.
Yeah.
Well, and just framing things.
Well, it's virtually off every hole, there's sea and mountains and nice valleys to hit balls down into, and there were little shelves which we made a bit bigger in places to pitch up onto. And it's really a good game of golf, a really, really good game of golf in a lovely place. I think it's... I'm very proud, but that's all I can say. And I'm very proud for Frankie's wife that they have such a thing. Then the old course, which was this person, that person, the other person.
Morris, Varden, yeah, Taylor, Coates.
All that.
Yeah.
And there was a huge flaw in it by modern standards, in that it went
the road
inland
crossings.
Over the road,
yeah.
And up the hill.
It was the first time I played it, it was those two shots were in play.
That was okay when I was up there as a young fella.
With little or no traffic on the main road.
But it became unsustainable, to use a fancy word.
Yeah.
So I said, I can bring that down. And Eddie had done some of the stuff he was doing for us now, Sandy Hills. He had two holes out there. And so I took them and changed them and added on and made nine holes on the seaside of the road to go with the valley. And that was very good.
Yeah. Of course.
It made things possible.
Yeah.
So I went down there and up to the clubhouse down at the Sandy Hills.
Okay.
Is it Sandy Hills?
Sandy Hills, yeah.
Sandy Hills. Mm-hmm. And so I said, okay, if we dogleg hole two from the clubhouse out. So that's my move number of the teams, one of them out onto the seaside because they were hidden for two.
Okay.
And you couldn't see the ocean. Here at the ocean, you couldn't see it.
Yeah.
That's about a lovely par three of the par
14.
There's nothing with that. 14 will do.
That screams Harry Cottage. Because I think if memory serves, in his lordship's his lordship's book on Rosapenna, you had actually done a bit of research in terms of a railway, I think, that Coates...
I was told, I didn't come in evidence of it, but I was told he had Quinty Narra Gauge Railway.
Uh-huh.
So he gets the stuff that's had to be moved.
Wow. Okay.
See, everyone goes on a natural course and say, look what nature did, but sometimes nature haven't helped.
Well, some assistance. Indeed. Indeed.
If a modern man did it, he said, you need.
That's pre-World War One, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Some 1912 or 1913 kind of thing.
I know for sure, no. Let's see my map. I told you to do a map of everything, you see.
Yeah.
And because at my age, I forget my name.
You're very self-deprecating, Pat.
I haven't fallen down for two golf balls, what you say.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a penner. But we dig down the valley, UT for what's now 10, right?
Okay.
So,
yeah.
But then you go to 11, UTs and 12, 13, and 14.
Okay.
There's three, including the points in UTs and parts of fairways. And at the 15th, the first one back,
yeah,
we put a new tee, moved it out a bit, and changed the fairway a bit.
Okay.
So I did 9 new holes, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of the other holes improved somewhat.
Okay.
And the end result is it's still the old Tom Miles, although he hasn't seen 9 of the holes at all.
No.
Far to the others. And I don't mind this. It's an old Tom course with a statue of old Tom, but no statue for
Not yet, Pat. Not yet. Hold your horses.
I've proven him on that before.
Posthumously.
Mock horror.
So you do mock horror pretty well.
It's the value of the name.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, yeah. And
the name carries the count, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's remarkable the quality of golf up in Donegal these days.
What was that? Yeah.
And you did a bit of work on the Strand 9 as well, I believe.
I don't know. I don't know what to call them, what now.
The one on the roadside. The one that, what is now the... You
come out of the clubhouse.
The front 9 of the old Tom now. You were responsible for some of that.
I did the whole thing, yeah.
Yeah.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
And I have suffered from people painting me out. That's why the book.
Uh-huh.
They just put it down. They can talk any crap they like, you see. And two or three people make deprecation remarks which stick. I mean, see, the old adage, throw them up, it sticks.
Yeah.
Hmm? So... you don't get upset at that. Well, you do get upset at that.
Yes.
Unless you're going to war, you don't.
Yeah,
just look at that. But the map there, you haven't seen this map, no?
Oh, I have. I've got a copy. I've a copy of that book at home.
Yeah, through the map.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I can't write that in a book unless it's true. It has my opinion. It has some concept. It's down in writing, and the maps are there.
So from a course design perspective, and again referencing the Holes in My Head book, I was very interested to read the chapter on the County Sligo Golf Club Revitalisation, which you have entitled Ending at the Beginning, which I thought was a lovely way of putting it. So obviously Sligo is the home of the West of Ireland Amateur Championship, the traditional Easter time beginning to Irish amateur golf, usually in the cold, wet and rain, and where no doubt you would have marvelled at the likes of Cecil Ewing, J.B. Carr et al. Compete over the years. You undertook a revitalisation project on behalf of the course at Ross's Point 2013. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah. How did it happen? Well, I've been in touch all the years, of course, and
I know, no, but it might be useful just to mention, obviously, County Sligo was, of course, a Harry Coates and Hugh Allison revision dating from 1927.
Yeah. So I had been there as a child and all the years, and I can't remember how this...
I think David O'Donovan might have called you the GM in 2013.
Oh, yeah, but what caused that? I kept in touch, you see, over the years, and I sent one or two letters over the years saying I could do this or that, of course, on the links. And one time I had this idea, I expressed it to Mr. Jones, called him, who was a big man in the club, and I said you should consider doing X, Y, and Z. This is years before things moved. And he said, write the letter and I'll promote it at the meeting. So I wrote the letter and he was absent from the meeting.
Ah, slight issue.
So for some years, there were a few people didn't understand me fully, thought I was looking for work, which I wasn't. I was just expressing the view there were one or two moles on the arse of a beauty queen. And so nothing happened. And then one day, David O'Donovan came here and talked for a while. And then he said, would you be interested, you see? And I said, holy God, let me out of here.
Does the bear shit in the woods?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah.
And down I went. And I devised a thought that, I wouldn't be a heavy shovel man mm-hmm. unless it's needed, you see. And certainly it's not needed when you're working on an historic piece of ground. Mm-hmm. So I said they'll need different things in future decades, no doubt. The world hasn't stopped spinning on its axis. But I said the one clear thought in my mind is the course has got a bit short for modern championship.
Okay. So what sort of yardage was it at the time? 6'7", 6'8", something like that?
Something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And just see, this is my only chance.
No, I understand.
My memory is gone.
No, I understand. Because obviously you put on a bit of distance on the third by pushing the green back the 50 or 60 yards.
First 10 yards, the third, sixth, the third, the fifth, the seventh by sideways move.
Yeah.
The eighth a little bit, the tenth a big bit, the 11th a bit, the 14th a good bit, the 15th a good bit. So we changed it.
Given your childhood connection with the place, it must have been a great honour.
You can't describe that.
There must be palpable excitement.
I was before he stopped saying, would you be interested, I was going through Cork and Shannon. What do you think?
I could well believe it. I could get you
those yardages if you're about 6'8", something like that. It's now up at 7'3", whatever. But the figures are easily verified. One of the best helps to a designer nowadays going to a place like that is if you've kept the old
scorecard or stroke savers. Yeah, yeah.
Stroke savers, is their mapping.
Yeah.
Of it as it goes.
Yeah, when I saw your picture of all the stroke savers in the book, I had a little chuckle to myself. Yeah. I too am besotted with picking up stroke savers.
Yeah.
Just for posterity more than anything else, you know?
Yeah.
And as you go back over time as well,
I have a good collection of them because it's like an engineering record. I'd have to look up the yardages, but making it longer was one of the things, but not to go mad. And the other thing was, of course, a few bunkers and to mostly add to greens, pin positions, as they call them. And
of course, you mentioned you surveyed all of the surrounds and the original green sites before you.
Recorded it to the inch, had engineers down, recorded anything I was going to touch, so that for posterity, you know, because people say this was a Tom Jones, this was a Elvis Presley, and this was whatever, and they don't know for sure because decades have gone and things have been done. But I know two things were shown.
This is how I found it.
Yeah, yeah. The kick banks at the 14th and the 10th were definitely Colt era, because I saw the same in South Africa where he was, and they were the outcome of work of genius, but I'm sure they weren't on purpose. It was just grading the banks with shovels and that at the time. And rounded it off. It turned out to be a great golf thing. I can't be sure of that, but I think a certain amount of design was in that way.
Accidental,
yeah.
To a certain degree.
To a certain degree. And these fellas didn't spend, if I spend an average of 200 days at a job with modern machinery, you can't do much in 2 or 3 weeks with a NASCAR. You know, so I'm not being derisory, but just being factual, because you suffer from certain amount of thinking which isn't necessarily 100% right. Now, the thing is, to make it longer and to introduce more pins, longer to keep with the game in that sense, and then pin positions, because say the first screen wide open, just moved the green out, added to it to the right behind a bunker and added a pin possible between the front bunker and the right and the wall. So a tighter shot. The second, we rebuilt the green essentially because an old-fashioned green on top of the hill, and had built it up further to try to make it visible from down the hill, which is an engineering impossibility unless they went 20
feet. Just with the gradient, it's quite...
So all these falls off the back and put the pin position. That third, we moved the green back because even I was getting on it in two as a par five quite regularly. So you had to do something. Fifth, we just changed the direction of the tee shot because there were blasts in the ball in most conditions up over the white stone on the fairway and leaving an 8-9 iron to the green as a par five. The par fives were weak.
That's the jump, isn't it?
Yeah. Extended the green back as well and narrowed it as it went back and so on. The seventh, very clear extension to the right.
That's Mahan's burn.
Yeah, some people didn't like some of this, and that's okay. That's the nature of it, you know. But did all these changes, and
you left the par threes alone.
Yeah, I think they're good par threes.
Oh, I mean, I personally love the fourth.
Yeah, great hole.
Bunkerless push up that cant away.
I don't know if it's pushed up much.
Or beg your pardon,
it's a plateau.
The plateau, should I say, beg your pardon. I think that whole orientation of it all goes to the back left-hand side.
Yeah, the greatest putt I ever saw on that one was back, I forget the year, but Barney O'Byrne from Swinford got to the final against Joe Carr. And Joe used to roast his enemy. He wouldn't come out on the first tee until 1 minute late, and your man would be shivering waiting. So Joe comes out, and lo and behold, Barney somehow managed to have the first three holes. And he had the honour for some reason. But at the fourth hole, he shoved his tee shot into about 4 or 5 feet at the fourth. And George just hung on to the top right corner, way, 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 and up a hill. And he holed it from there. Match over. Barney was dead. And he was dead really about 2 or 3 months later because his plane crashed off Wexford down there. The only plane that ever crashed on Aer Lingus. Do you remember that?
Tusker Rock.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, I know of it, but I wasn't.
That was Barney O'Byrne.
Yeah.
He had two losses that year, the poor fella. But that's a great hole. And the ninth, I always liked. You see, I used to, as a kid, I'd cycle down from Ballymote and play golf and get the ninth. You could see all the way back to the third tee. You could see anyone coming. So you could sit down and suck on your bar of chocolate and comfort and watch them coming down the hill at five and over the plains. When you get to the sixth green, you just mosey on so you wouldn't get squeezed. And a beautiful place to be. Then 13, wonderful hole with a stream trickling. Yeah. And then 16, they were flawless.
Yeah.
Could be different.
Yeah.
Equally good.
Okay.
But hard to know if they could be any better. So leave them alone.
And did the club have much in the way of letters or drawings or anything from the cold period left?
I never asked for and never saw.
Okay.
Yeah. Never asked for and never saw.
And never proffered either, if they did exist.
No. Yeah. No, it's history, and what we're doing with what's here now and what's coming. And not just Sligo, so be careful we don't mention this just in Sligo, but one of the, it's the same at the European Club. So much of a golf course's reputation and performance depends on who's placing the pins for whom, you know. So if I put in what I call a championship pin position, I mean it's for that. It's like the one...
The smelly ones.
It's like the one down at the 16th of Augusta hanging over the edge of the lake, you know, and the front left of 11, things like that. There are pin positions. But clubs, north, south, east and west, greenkeepers and committee men, whoever does it, can actually place the pins in the championship positions for your 36-37 handicapper. And that's not going to be popular.
It's not going to be popular because, as you rightly pointed out, those people will take on shots that they have the ability to do. And like, rather than play 20 yards or 15 yards right or left.
It's like giving a non-musician a go at a grand piano and tell them to play an opera piece instead of ding, ding, ding along the low keys. And so the human factor is at play. Sligo has been given added length, which is important. Bunkering considered for today's play, and it's hard to tell exactly in the future and the wind changes, but that'll do some business or cause a person to think about his shot, the good player. And it's a strong enough golf course for most people at this age. And then you turn around and some fellow goes out and shoots a 62 and you say, bless me, Father, for I have sinned. Huh? And this is what they're doing on the tour now. They're setting the courses up easy. Let them blast away. And they're using 7 iron or less most of the time into holes. And they're great golfers. And they are good golfers. But I always keep thinking of Johnny Miller saying, I'd rather it closed in a bit because that'll get the shot maker.
Yeah, exactly. And come here, tell me this. I think probably over the course of your time working away on County Sligo, you would have worked with both Graham Beat, who moved on to Wild Port Rush.
That's right.
And Mark Miller, who's there now, I think.
Yeah, I think he is, yeah.
I've been fortunate enough to host Graham on the podcast last year, and I've come across Mark a few times as well. Two good guys.
Yeah, most greenkeepers are good people. I never met a greenkeeper I'd like to shoot.
Yes.
Yeah, I just remember the Eddie Hackett thing of do the maintenance.
Yeah, and did you do the work in house with Graham and?
Oh yeah, but I did that with clubs. It made it possible for the club at a time when there was a bit of a shortage of money in the world. It wasn't always boom, you know. And I didn't intrude on the club's exact figures, but the way I always worked with clubs, I didn't work with a million clubs. I did a good few. I did maybe 50, but not big scale like that. And I always assumed that budgeting would be important. So you stretch the job out a bit. And then if you don't have fellas to play dug up and fellas dying all around, you're never going to play again. And so we would have stretched it out in that way and allow them to have time to consider it. Of course, you change captains, change committees, and politics would change around you a little bit. But you have been true to your client that they could get it done economically and as undisruptive as possible. And of course, it's a huge help if you can get your in-house team working on it, because the contractor certainly knows how to dig you for money. And amongst the places I worked with clubs like that, Donegal, Rosapenna, Ballyliffin, Port Salut, well, Port Salut brought in a contractor for a while, up in Grenor, down the country, Wicklow, and inland, St. Margaret's obviously was contractor, but umpteen places introduced the idea that if the in-house team would do some of the work, it would be a huge saving. And to do that, then you had to be fair to your staff and a bit flattering. You had to praise them. And
but a good opportunity for them as well to upskill a little bit as well.
And in each of these places, Northwest, the same. In each of these places, we were blessed that there were two or three committee men who were willing to get cold and wet going out to watch the job. And that, in turn, gave the men encouragement that they weren't just labourers down the shed. Example of Ossa's Point. The committee. It'd be a great thing if we got the lads in for lunch, going up towards Christmas. Okay. Oh, yeah. My plans don't always work. Because it could have been, I didn't know the depth of it. I always do that. But brought them in anyway, had a nice lunch. And the lads got up and went back to the shed to have their normal lunch.
Okay.
And me standing on the third tee like a fucking each.
Yeah, where are they?
You like that? They wouldn't have to focus
them. They've gone home.
What do you think? The human relations and based on genuine respect. Again, I don't say I'm a saint to him, but one day it started piss rain, you see. Out at the third fairway as it is now. And I was being to run like the others would run then. Next thing I see a fella digging away. He was on that day. He had to dig a trough that wide and what that deep to put some pipes into.
Yeah.
And he was digging away. Doing his job. And he's doing what? He's digging the hole, and instead of scattering the dirt everywhere to get away the moors, he's putting a nice little heap here and there as he went along. And I was gone past him 20 yards. I said, "Holy Moses." I went back and I said, "Hello. I want to say you're doing a great job."
Yeah.
He said, "Well, I'm very proud of my work."
Yeah.
And I said, "Bingo, we've got to score the goal here."
Yeah.
And talked for a while. We became the best of friends. 4 or 5 weeks later, one of his sons committed suicide. And I went up to the funeral. And best friends this day, we're both old now. But I always believe in if you can't, the soccer man was trying to keep the mood and the interest. Hmm?
Yeah.
And but if the leader is it all serious, he ain't going to need for long. Hmm? But Ross's point is a masterpiece, and the game it should sustain the game. No time, but every course on the planet. I nearly got extradited from Augusta one year.
Yeah,
I took a picture of playing hole 2. And the team moved way back beside the boundary wall.
Okay.
Big 15-foot stone wall.
Yeah.
And I wrote a story, same down at the third, fourth, 15, same.
Yeah.
And I wrote a story, same in the magazine, backs to the wall at Augusta.
Okay.
Which I was right.
Well, this was before they bought Augusta Country Club, of course.
They bought half the town.
Yeah.
Because I was right.
Yeah.
So you're better not being right sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I was carpeted.
Were you?
Yes, I had a few fellas. But I had a few champions in the club.
Well, like the likes of, I mean, Gary McCord was run off site as well for suggesting that the surrounds, the green surrounds had been bikini waxed. Mm-hmm. Whoever the chairperson was at the time didn't like that. So, Augusta.
Oh, yeah, in bikini.
Bikini wax, yeah.
Oh, yeah. But I met out one day playing with Enda Kenny.
Yeah.
And Dermot Guinness and a fellow called Ford, who was the vice president of the club. His parents were from Carlow.
Okay.
Now Ford was a 5 handicap in the club.
Uh-huh.
And we got to the 1, 2, 3, 4, 6th.
Uh-huh.
The par 3 down off the hill.
Yeah.
And the green built like that, Jorkamers, that's where it is.
Yeah.
And the pin would be up there.
Yeah.
And when the pin was up there, you couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And Ford took, you all landed on the bottom deck, he's a shed down.
Yeah.
He took 4 or 5 putts to get up and stay up.
Okay.
And that's the great golf course.
Yeah.
Like it's, I won't use any perjurative terms, but if I did it, I'd be sacked.
Yeah. Yeah. And was that a Mackenzie green or a Maxwell green or can you remember? Green.
You see, I've had jobs where I had a rule always.
Mm-hmm.
I operate a machine, an excavator.
Yeah.
And
you're preempting my next question, but well done.
Never did a bulldozer.
Okay.
And I'd make a rule, no one come within me, within 100 yards of me when I work. Unless it's very, very important. Okay. Then you do that, I come down.
Yeah.
And if it's the case you don't like my work, I put on my coat and I go home. I won't send you a bill.
Okay.
No hassle.
Okay.
Never happened. But you have to have space to work.
Yeah.
And in all of these places with successive committees of very successful people and strong-minded people, I haven't been keeping note of who did what. Yeah?
Okay. Fresh.
But after a while, it becomes nonsensical. Like a golf course goes to 30% bigger than it was.
Yeah.
And nothing changed.
Yeah.
It's still McKenzie. There's a moment. And down the street, down by boat, down by rain, and built 6 million golf courses. It's just too exaggerated.
Yeah, he's obviously had quite a big influence down there, but I mean, you would probably suggest that the Morecambes.
The Mona Lisa wouldn't be the Mona Lisa done that way.
No, correct.
The Sistine Chapel ceiling.
Correct.
If he left it to the popes to do the Sistine Chapel ceiling, it wouldn't have happened. Peter de Bruyne would become a designer for a little while afterwards.
Yeah.
And I used the Sistine Chapel as a sample, they say. He was doing it for Lord something over near London.
Okay.
That's his first golf course job.
Yeah.
And he says, intruding. Well, I said, Peter, think your Michelangelo. Ah, yeah. The Sistine Chapel. And the Pope comes along with some suggestions. He can turn the fuck off.
Yeah.
You should try that on your golf. With bad results. Huh?
So you are pretty hands-on.
In terms of the design, or have been, if you like, in terms of...
On the belief that it's not yours unless you did it.
Yeah.
And did it at least to the extent of being there every stroke. If you're not there, it's not yours. Concept overall can be yours. But if you're not there, either doing or directing the job... it's more tricky though.
Yeah.
Because it can be missed by very little and chip can become impossible.
Yep.
And, I've had that pride in my good, bad, or indifferent. People can think good, bad, or indifferent.
Yep. Yeah.
But inwardly, the drive is on for the best I can do.
And you have been known to operate a bulldozer, sorry, a not bulldozer, a an excavator.
An excavator.
Sand Pro?
I start quite often at 6 in the morning and keep going. That's because I'm away from home. But,
of course.
And you don't get much done in the late hour of the day.
No.
And
particularly when you've been interrupted.
Yeah. I had one golf course where I was six committee men gathered around was changing a lady's tea.
Okay.
There are five or six. Yeah, the thing could go 6 inches that way, 5 inches that way, going down. The sentiment of my getting onto this gator.
It's a professional at work.
I'm going for a spin down the other end of the course to see what's happening.
Yeah.
And I hope we have great decisions made to come back. They're all gone.
Of course they were.
Because, you see, into it comes not just thing itself, but fuck him and not him.
Yeah.
And you don't need to do that.
No.
But there's a lot of legend in the world. And I don't have the historical proof left, right, or center in much of it. But in... a couple of cases, I spent hours in the National Archives seeking things.
Yeah.
And no track of proof that happened what happened. Doesn't disprove it.
Yeah.
But no clear proof.
Yeah.
And some things, like going to the National Archives, it means they're important things.
Sure.
So, it's always meant to be comprehensive.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then I've nothing. A lot of you don't have to be a genius by name or by reputation to do good work.
Sure.
forget the drainage, young warrior.
Drainage, drainage, drainage. The three most important things about golf course architecture. Oh. Yeah.
It's not easy to pull this up.
No. No, which I guess just goes to show how important or how much advantage there is to have a site of a sandy nature.
What is this? It's forgiven.
Yeah.
There was no question about that. And you see, it's the sand. It's amazing it's not moving like hell. Now, there's erosion in place, but how it's not moving like hell? Because down in our place, we have a buried tunnel from the 13 tee out to the 6th green, and there's a great big house there before the sands came in the early 1800s.
Oh, yeah?
It's on the map of 1810.
Wow.
And up in Rosapenna, Lord Leitrim had a three-story mansion down in the broad area of the 8th hole.
Oh, yeah?
And it got buried in the space of 3 weeks.
That's the par... The 8th is the par 5,
yeah,
is it?
Yeah, down and back. And that's down there. It's on the maps. And years later, the locals got permission to go out and dig a hole down through the dunes and down through the roof of the mansion to see was there anything of value left.
But there wasn't.
No. They had it in their pockets coming out.
And of course, you found a castle in Port Salon.
Yeah, which was an amazing one. That was an amazing one. And some people, like the locals, started taking the castle away in their vans and that. So I phoned Dublin, you see, and I said, folks, this is a castle, a McDonough's castle, I had found out. Uh-huh. I said, it's vanishing, and I don't want to damage it, but can I just cover it over and play over it as a hump, you know?
Tumbleweed. You never got a response from that, did you?
I don't say go ahead.
To go ahead?
Yeah, as long as the thing was left.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, but it was gone only for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But this is the history of the planet is awesome, where there are tunnels and things.
So 55 plus years on, Pat, from the design of your first golf course at Castle Comer. And indeed, obviously, many, many years before designing holes on at the
bits
second.
And pieces, yeah.
Bits and pieces. And
at and ba- more the back than bits of the, and pieces.
I'm just wondering how you would characterize your approach to golf course architecture. And perhaps how it's evolved over time.
Well, it's a game to be played and give enjoyment. That's the critical thing. And then, depending on the site, can you add some exciting challenges to it for different grades of golfer? See, the differences are crude off the tee. The big hitter hits it big and the small fella hits it small. So you can predict things there fairly well. But everyone comes together in the area of the green. And the trick is how much of that teases everyone to an acceptable level. I have a saying to people down at the European Club when they're going golfing, I say, now I'll give you a tip. Read the 10-foot putt before you miss it. I say, you know, when you're doing the 10-foot putt, you see flat back of the hand. As soon as you hit it, you see it tilted. And you haven't had to read it to see it because it's plain as day. And anyone can do huge sweeps and it's called a drama. But at the end of the day, it doesn't take a huge degree of slope to throw a ball on or sideways. And can you present, and it's for everyone at the green, this is the problem. And the slope's off. And the thing is, people, I won't mention on record, but
there are greens
which become bunkers, and the 15th bunkers the dips because people go into them and take divots the size of your foot. So it's impossible to keep them as a dip. So you have to know how the wear and tear factor is coming and who you're providing for. So you have to know how the ball is going to behave and how people are going to behave. And there has to be challenge, reasonable question, not a challenge, question on every shot. And the first question is, who am I? do I know my game? And I spent, I never got to be a good golfer. I was able to play in the championships and get my ass kicked. But
that's pretty good now, to be fair. You're very self-deprecating.
Yeah, but no, I didn't have the nervous system.
Uh-huh.
But I always knew the strength of each club. I knew what I could do and what shapes I could make. And it's the same as painting a house, which brush to use, which do you use a ladder or a scaffolding or whatever. And you get much more pleasure out of it when you know how you use each tool. So in building a golf course, I have a very complex mind in that. It's not easy to explain just in a few minutes because I spent hours and years figuring it. And each bit of ground, huge, huge things. Deception and perception.
Yep.
A great thing to have been a photographer, and artists have this as well. You see, that's a flat canvas, you see.
Yeah.
If the river is coming down for yards and miles down out of the picture,
yeah,
that's, you don't see it as flat.
Yeah. There's depth to it, really. Yeah. Perspective.
And people don't understand that the golf designer is at all of that.
Aye.
And one of the biggest ones is a very simple one. Look at depth of field.
Yeah.
See? You look at that book.
Yeah.
Big bit of the wall not there.
Yeah.
And it seems to be stuck to the wall.
Yeah.
And it's not, you see?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's stuck to the wall.
Yeah.
It's not.
Yeah.
So if you put a green or eight, for example, the green is in front of a back hill and two side hills. It looks that size.
Yeah.
And take the 10th and there's no such around. It's the same size people taking on.
Yeah.
As they open up the back and open up the left, and it looks huge.
Yeah.
And this can have several cuts. And that might be, and largely because he hit it without conviction.
Uh-huh.
He knows this up now. Down to a sixth hole, he had a little bush about 35 yards short of the green.
Uh-huh.
And I keep it trimmed just around the little bush. Just, that's 5'10" man. 5'10" is important. 5'10" man, instead of a tee, can see, can't see the front of the green, he just sees the bush.
Because the bush is in the way.
And
You're wicked. You're wicked, Mr.
And he thinks that the bush is in at the green.
Yeah.
That's 35 yards short.
So yeah.
He tosses it over the bush and yeah. He's short.
Yeah.
And, and that's what Tom Craddock, with whom I have a very happy association. He one day St. Margaret's came to a head bending the 10th green up on a shelf ahead of us. And I said, I think I have it, Tom. He said, I can't see a fucking thing. You're shorter by 4 inches than me.
Yeah.
So I learned then to design raised greens hunched over on the fairway to make sure people shorter than me can see it. You wouldn't think of that one.
That's very, very sensible.
It'll come home in a big way if there's a 6'6" design a green perfect. I can see every inch of the green. No good for 99% of the.
You just got to remember that not many people or most people are 6'6". No, or indeed even 6'1" or whatever you are.
6'1", you see.
Yeah.
And so I learned to just hunch down and get my eyes level with Tom's.
Okay.
Whether he was there or not.
Okay.
Hmm?
Okay. Okay. Interesting. You'd be glad to hear it. We're down to the last few questions. So, and thank you very much for your time.
I'm in a bad place. I'm at a stage of life where the mind isn't wandering totally, but it can. And my memory was never good because I refused to learn Shakespeare. I couldn't see any reason.
You didn't miss very much.
But I didn't train my memory accordingly.
Okay, I got you.
And even to the extent I could never remember people's names. And I had to come up with a device, which was, I tell any new member, I say, for the first few times I meet, tell me who you are, because I won't remember. Having taken thousands of pounds off you, I won't remember who you are. But
but once a year.
Yeah. So I got the device. I call everyone I didn't know cousin. And then if two or three cousins were coming at the same time,
oh, dear.
I'd be in trouble. So I started wearing laced shoes. And the cousins were approaching. So I go down and tie the shoes and let them introduce each other. Job solved.
Ah.
Then I started to lose hips and I couldn't reach down there.
Okay.
I don't meet that many people now.
Okay.
Cousins.
So I don't know whether we mentioned this on recording or not, but you did mention your book collection earlier on. And I believe it's 7,500 books.
Thereabouts, yeah.
What books in your collection hold a special place in your heart? And who would be your favorite golf writers?
That's tough. I was reared on Longhurst, Darwin, Leonard Crawley, who was a great hero of mine,
mm-hmm.
Herbert Warren Wind slightly later, and all the older fellas. And I just adore them. You know, I brought one or two books up here, and I can dip into any of those and
be happy
for hours, you okay. know. So I'm very lucky that I have a lot of dipping available. The great thing is, you go back years later, as you lose your memory, you can go back and think it's new.
It's almost as if you never read it in the first place.
and the same with films, you know.
Well,
I think I'm a genius.
Pat, may you grow old.
I can be at the cinema, don't go too often, I can say, oh, he's going to get scalped later.
I've
seen it four times already.
Okay.
But there's no particular, but I loved essays.
Okay.
Essays are the thing. Instruction in moderation, when they come with a good new idea, but there aren't that many. It's such a simple game.
Well, if you like essays, I really do hope you enjoy Richard Pennell's.
I'd sit down to that now.
And the thing is, you can dip in and out of it. The chapters aren't related. Yeah. So you can read a chapter, leave it down for 2 weeks and read another chapter.
What drives me mad about being a librarian is you have all these books on shelves. You've seen the shelves in the book and you have them all done alphabetical and all that. And the shelves are getting tight. And next thing, someone called Mahoney produces a book. Now he has to go in the middle here. So do you move all the books to the left or all the books to the right to make space for Mr. Mahoney?
Yeah.
And in a librarian, of course, they do it on age and that, and I'm too old for that. But you have to be able to put your finger on it. Henry Cotton, I became a partner with Henry for a short while because I loved the man. But he did all these lovely books and with pictures in them. So they show you when there was no television, and show you all the fellas swinging different. And he'd have some fella write a poem and he could dip into it and dip out of it. And Henry would be my favorite in that sense. But Darwin is unsurpassable.
For essays, yeah.
Longhurst, very good.
Yeah.
And then there were quite a few people who had the privilege of meeting as they were older and I was younger. And but now it's gone on and on and they're into other means. But it's what you do with the books at the end.
It certainly is.
For people with that problem. And might get them to do the Indian thing, put me on a raft with all the books on fire.
Go on.
See me going past the first tee at Portmarnock.
Well, there you go. I think probably the likes of Portmarnock and who's their historian? Brendan Cashel. I'm sure he'd love your cache of books instead of seeing them on a pie, you and the pyre on fire.
It's good, isn't it? No, he did a wonderful job for me in his book on Ross's Point. See that out.
Haven't seen it, no. I've seen Brendan's one on the most recent one for the 125th of Portmarnock. I have that at home.
Yeah, he's very
phenomenal book.
He's very detailed. And but he gave me a great mileage in it, and the history of the West of Ireland went into great detail. They named a trophy for me there this year.
Did I
see that? Yeah,
didn't see that. Very appropriate. Congratulations.
Very appropriate in view of the fact I was always interested in qualifying or not.
Yeah.
To put up a big, big trophy.
And was it more qualifying or not? Or was it sort of, did it balance out?
The leading qualifier, yes. Okay. That's me.
Okay.
And so it's very nice to do that.
Yeah.
And They did it because they had a 54-hole qualifier for handicaps purposes and that.
Okay.
So it was a tournament in itself and then into match play. Now they've gone back to 36 holes this year, but the trophy endures.
Yeah.
That's nice. It's shattering, really, that in your own sort of childhood place that they would do that.
Yeah. Hmm? Well, you've made an indelible mark there, which is...
I don't know about that, but that was...
You made your mark anyway, let's put it that way.
That was a blow for Ireland.
Huh? Absolutely, absolutely. Listen, as regular listeners know, I proffered the same final questions, the same two final questions, should I say, to my guests. The penultimate question relates to book recommendations for listeners that may be interested in augmenting their own golfing libraries. You have a bit of latitude here. Generally, guests suggest two books. However, I suspect you may find it difficult only to proffer two. But I'm very happy for you to offer as many suggestions as you want.
Well, first of all, any of mine. Only 13 to choose from. I'm hard-pressed then. The fellas wouldn't go for the old stuff like I do. Club histories are great in moderation. But this one, Tommy Armour, which is hard to find now, I found that easy as a kid. You see how they highlighted the important points in red. And my dad had me down, and you see these ticks are his. When we get to a paragraph that was of importance, he'd mark it and say, memorize that. Be sure to have your weight definitely on the left foot. Your weight must not shift from there during the shot. Okay?
Is that for chipping?
Yeah.
Pitching?
For anything. Take more of a backswing than you think you may need. The ball popping up in the air will cut down distance surprisingly. Right? And on. So those old instruction books were good, but they're different now because the game has changed. And I love anything Darwin. I have a complete collection of Darwin, complete collection of Longhurst, Leonard Crawley. And Louis T. Stanley. Look up Louis T. Stanley, L-O-U-I-S-T Stanley. He was one of the founders of Formula One racing as well. And he produced picture books. He was a photographer and a writer and a very successful businessman. And he produced about 10 or 11 wonderful books, which brought us around the world, showed us all the swings close up, and discussed architecture. And you'd cover all the early history that way.
That was a precursor to the World Atlas of Golf or something like that, was it?
The which?
The World Atlas of Golf. So the Warren Wind and who else wrote in that? Thompson?
Yeah.
70s, mid-70s kind of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic stuff. And then as they come out, you see, the only books I don't buy now, there's one out there recently, Cheat in Chief or something, Donald Trump. And
okay.
Then by a friend of mine written, and what awful rubbish, not God, just absolutely.
Commander in Chief, I think is what it's called.
Commander in Chief. And there's another one out there now I got, and I started reading it. This Live Golf, you know.
That's the Shipnock one.
And it's all fuck in it. And yeah. I say that's nothing to do with
it. Live and Let Die,
yeah.
I think is what that's called.
Yeah, that's right. Live is the Roman numerals for 54. And it's interesting enough that you find who killed who and all that. But I prefer pure golf, you know. And so I have a terrible head. I have to apologize because my head was never good for memories.
But you're all right.
And it's getting worse. And conscious is getting worse.
Well, hopefully you can manage the last question. So as a man steeped in golf, I'm interested to know, what are your five favorite golf courses and why you've chosen them? Again, you have some leeway here if five doesn't give you sufficient scope.
Well, it's very simple. You see, I love them all. Mullingar with the smell of the Midland beef coming out of the kitchen when you pass the clubhouse three times. It wouldn't be viewed as a great
You're a politician, Pat. Huh? You're a politician.
Yeah. But I love them all, you see. And I answered that this way. It's like your children. How do you choose? And I love Waterville, love Birkdale, love Port Marnock, love Royal Dublin, largely because of the people who were very kind to me. Tender spot for Royal Dublin. And we have a match most years because COVID disrupted it.
Tell me about that, right? And David Kennedy's involved in that.
Yeah.
Amongst others.
Yeah. And because awfully kind to me. But where was I going? Help me here.
Your five favorite courses.
But I tell you, see, I do answer it this way. I dodge the bullet. I say, now, if I was made, well, favorite is a nice word, you see. Because the Golf World once asked me to name my 10 best golf courses in Pretend Ireland. So I put in Mullingar and a few things, and they came, my 10 favourite, but they came out, and I had Mullingar put out the 10 best, which is a different question. So I say, I don't know, I love them all, which I do. I never went on a golf course I didn't like yet. I've been on some fairly poorly presented ones. But I say, if I was the judge in the Miss World contest, when it gets down to the last 1,000 girls in swimsuits, I'm dead.
You can't distinguish.
Well, really. You know what I mean? And I'm not joking there. It's the same thing. How do you judge beauty and happiness and that? And but I just mentioned a few there. Ross is obviously heaven to me. Ballyliffin, heaven, Ross and Penna. And Royal County Down, except for the blindness a bit. And
do you think that's unfair?
Which?
Blindness. Or do you think golf should be fair at all?
Someone said it's blind only the first time round.
Yeah.
But if you're playing it only once, it's a problem. Galise wrote a book, and he quoted Nicklaus in it from after some of the seniors' championships or something.
Yeah.
Nicklaus has a paragraph in it saying it's a debt trap or something like that.
Uh-huh.
That there's 20, in his count, or 27 blind shots which you could get hit by. So it's a problem. It's a problem. To take the ninth is a beautiful hole, but I was asked one time to write the best nine or 10 best holes in Ireland. I said, well, I would certainly want the ninth at Royal County Down, was give me a 25-mile site because I want the mountain and I want the steeples and I want the whole fucking thing. It's different if you take all that away, you know. And the blind shot doesn't add to it. But down in South Africa, I forget the name of the course, the Gary Player course he had.
Fan course, probably.
Yeah. And we went out and the front nine, heaven, into the mountains. Turned on the 10th, coming home, and quite dull.
Nothing.
And I said,
no backdrop.
I said, my God, these holes aren't as good, but they're exactly as good, but the mountain was now behind you.
Okay.
So that's very important. It's like in the theatre, the lighting and the set, that it all counts. But in outside Ireland, I love Birkdale and I love Turnberry. Everyone likes St. Andrews because it's just a place makes you wonder about. And then down south, it's all links. All links. Any of the courses down in Kent are good. And overseas, I had a lot of happy days at Penina with Henry Cotton. And
Portugal, yeah.
Yeah, down south. And he was a special fella. But and in Ireland, give me them all virtually. I haven't seen. At one stage, I had seen every golf course in Ireland back in the 70s, say. But only about 200 of them then. Now there are roughly 400 and at least 150 I haven't seen, haven't had time. And of the ones I have seen, half of them have gone from 9 holes to 18 and some have gone demised. So, but the ones that have stayed, I had great days in places like Carrick and Shannon, and great days in Bundoran, and great days, all the courses around Dublin, Hermitage, all the ones that have been shoved out of the frontline debate when it gets to international talk. But my God, what great golf we have, eh?
Oh, we do. Yeah. We do.
And down to the Curragh, you know.
Oh, what a spot. Curragh and Carlow, I mean, just are two of the best golf inland courses we have.
And the mystery of golf is totally, see, down in the Curragh, I had my last good game of golf about 15 years ago.
Okay.
I was putting on a small pro tournament for a sponsor, and pro didn't show up, so I popped out to play myself, and I beat the remaining 23 fellas. I had a 67 with the last ball.
Oh, very impressive.
Which is very good, you see. And then next Sunday, I'm up at Laytown.
Okay.
Which is a lovely place.
Yeah.
And I was put out with Bobby Brown.
Aye.
The great local
great
pro,
Bobby.
And Walter Sullivan.
Okay.
Two of the nicest pros you could find. On a Sunday, blue sky, beautiful day. And I've been thinking all week from Tuesday, 67 at Carlow, I'll kill Laytown. But lucky enough, it's near the airport. I get out alive. But I get up at the first tee and we hit three good drives. Mine was the best, unfortunately. They popped theirs onto the green. I pop mine into the left bunker. And I take three to get out. And I start 7-6-7. Now, I drove onto the downslope at the second and trying to cut it up onto a raised green. I looked at my hands, looked at the sky, looked at the company. Everything was lovely, but I had turned into pure crap. No, it's so total, so sudden.
Well, it's just as well, form is temporary. Class is permanent, though, Pat.
Yeah, I know the class I'm in.
Well, listen, in conclusion, I just wanted to extend my thanks to you for agreeing to the chat and giving me the time this afternoon. I hope you gleaned some modicum of enjoyment from it. On behalf of the listenership and myself, thanks, Mike.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure meeting you. Hopefully, we both live a long time yet and we'll meet often.
Continued success.
Help God.
Cheers. Thanks, Pat.
Many thanks for tuning in. As usual, you can find us online at firmandfast.golf or on Twitter at firmandfastgolf. Please continue to like, subscribe, and comment. It really is appreciated. Until the next time, happy golfing.